Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We have seen a little bit of an offensive revolution in the SEC over the course of the last couple of years. Record-setting, explosive Alabama offense a year ago leads the tide to the SEC title and eventually the national championship. Year before that, record-setting, explosive LSU offense does kind of the same thing. We've seen this, you know, big-time offense coupled with national championship story a couple of times now. And so in relationship to what Georgia did a year ago with its first-year offensive coordinator, Todd Monken, some of that can seem like a little bit of a letdown seeing just how big some of the biggest offenses in college football have been in recent years. However, I do think when you examine more closely, when you look more carefully what happened with Monken and Georgia a year ago in its first year, a deeper look at all of this tells, I think, a story that probably hasn't gotten quite enough attention, and maybe some aspects of what Monken did in year one for Georgia a year ago maybe slightly underrated just a little bit. I want to try to tell you the story this way. Let's go back to almost exactly a year ago, or at least near a year ago, when Kirby Smart was speaking about Todd Monken, who had kind of just been hired and kind of wasn't, even officially announced as the guy who would be the offensive coordinator and the play caller, even though we knew he kind of would be that. And obviously for the media questioning Smart there on that day, there's this thought of, well, how much of an offensive transformation is Monken going to be able to provide? I think we would all said after the 2019 results that Georgia needed some of that. But how much is Monken going to be able to provide for Georgia? And Kirby a year ago was very careful not to get too deep into what the start of the Todd Monken era might look like or how different the Georgia offense might be with him at the helm. Let me give you this from Kirby from a year ago.
I think everybody wants to hear some grand speech of opening this up and doing that. That's not necessarily what you need is to be productive offensively, score points, and do the explosive plays, which we've talked about consistently.
So no grand proclamation from Kirby about Monken was going to be, but in terms of the overall goal, as he said, to score more points, gain more yards, do those kinds of things, I think we can safely say that Monken was successful in doing that for Georgia this year. Let me give you an example of this from a source that I cite from time to time, although I don't fully understand all of his reasonings. He's probably smarter than I am. I can't fully comprehend all of this, but our buddy SEC StatCat on Twitter recently kind of put out, just how successful the Georgia offense was in year one under Todd Monken. I like the way that he says it. StatCat says on Twitter that in Todd Monken's first year calling plays for Georgia, UGA saw its touchdown rate, three and out rate, explosive play rate, and success rate all improve in SEC play. He goes on to say that though some elements remain intact, it's safe to say that this offense now has a new identity when it drops back to pass. But the phrase that StatCat uses on Twitter here that kind of jumps out at me is all of this happening, quote, as he says, in SEC play. I think when you really examine what Monken did in year one, and when you really want to kind of view kind of what's possible for this offense in year two, I think you have to appreciate the fact that what Todd Monken did last season was a season unlike any other in SEC history, in the fact that you were only playing SEC opponents. Then Georgia played a top 10 ranked Cincinnati team in the bowl game, but you did not have the kinds of opponents that previous Georgia teams have had a chance to beat up on and therefore kind of pad their stats again. Let me kind of dive a little deeper into this for a moment. That Georgia last year was fifth in the SEC in scoring, had been fifth in the SEC in scoring the previous year as well, but Georgia scored more points in 2020 than it did in 2019. It scored 32.3 points per game this past season after scoring 30.8 points per game in 2019. But that's more interesting and more relevant for future success for Georgia when you realize that all of this came, as I said before, against an SEC foe or a top 10 ranked Cincinnati team at the end of the year. By comparison, the Georgia team that scored 30.8 points per game in 2019, those numbers were aided by 63 points scored against Murray State, 55 points scored against Arkansas State, 52 points scored against lowly Georgia Tech. Those are the kinds of opponents that Todd Monken didn't have the chance to beat up on in 2020 in his first year at Georgia. If you go back and look more closely at the 2019 team, and it's not my, you know, intention here to disparage that group or anything like that, but it does give you better context for how much better offensively Georgia was under Monken. In 2019, Georgia actually only averaged 25 points per game against SEC foes. So you compare what Georgia did in 2019, 25 per game against SEC foes, to what Georgia did in 2020, 32.3 points per game against SEC foes. I think it kind of speaks to just how much better Todd Monken was in year two. Not, I should say in year one. Not as good as the most explosive offense in the SEC the last couple of years, but pretty darn good. And the possibility that a year two explosion could be on the way, there is at least some statistical evidence to point to the possibility that the best is still yet to come for Georgia when it comes to all of this. Let me tell you why this is relevant. Because we are obviously looking at a situation where the reigning SEC champion Alabama, the reigning national champion Alabama, finds itself in a bit of a transition here. And it's always amazing to me. And I was on the Atlanta sports radio station 92.9 The Game yesterday, and this topic came up. I've told you before that when Alabama is on top in the SEC, it's easy to envision, or it's difficult to envision a time in which that was ever not true, right? I mean, Nick Saban has been so dominant. He's won so many championships. We all understand all of that. That when he's on top in the game, well, it just sort of seems like it's always been the case. But think about this for a moment. You already know this, but let me just kind of restate it as a reminder here. Georgia has been to three SEC championship games under Kirby Smart. But only one of those games actually took place against Alabama, right? In 2018, you played the Crimson Tide, but in 2017, 2019, Georgia played other foes other than Alabama. Alabama's only won the SEC West twice in the last 4 years. This notion that as you head towards the 2021 season, that Georgia finds itself facing an impenetrable, unbeatable foe when it comes to the Alabama Crimson Tide, history would suggest that's not necessarily always the case, that Bama has been beaten. Now, it's fair to point out they haven't really been beaten by Georgia, and questions should remain about Georgia's ability to do that, but it's absolutely fair to question if Alabama is going to be able to stay on top in the SEC for 2021, given the fact that a couple times in recent years, Alabama has not been able to do that. All the more reason that the stuff that I just said about Todd Monken remains very relevant for the upcoming year, that Georgia actually finds itself in a situation with some continuity this year. You bring back your starting quarterback in JT Daniels. You bring back your offensive coordinator in Todd Monken, who, as I said before, has proven himself to be pretty effective in his first year there. On the Alabama side of things, we don't quite know yet what that offense is going to be. It should probably be pretty good. Most Alabama offenses have been. But the notion that it's guaranteed or something close to guaranteed to be as good as recent Alabama offenses have been, including last year's record-setting Alabama offense, I'm not quite so sure that's necessarily as much of a given as some people treat it to be. Let me give you an example of this. The other day that ESPN, and I love these like little, article series they do, big questions facing each of the top 25 teams, and they're way too early top 25. And the other day at ESPN.com, they were looking at the biggest newcomer for each of those teams. For Georgia, for instance, it was Smile Mondon. We'll probably talk more about Mondon on the show tomorrow as a big newcomer for Georgia, at least in the eyes of ESPN. But on the Alabama side of things, the big newcomer there was not a player. It was new offensive coordinator Bill O'Brien. Let me read you a couple of sentences here from what Alex Scarborough says about the new offensive coordinator at Alabama, O'Brien. Scarborough writes for ESPN that Nick Saban has earned the benefit of the doubt when it comes to assembling his coaching staff. Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian, he means previous offensive coordinators, their careers were on the trash heap. And Saban found success with both as his offensive coordinators. And now it's Bill O'Brien's turn at professional revitalization after flaming out with the Houston Texans. So what Scarborough writes here is very similar to what we've seen other places there as well. Nick Saban is the master rehabilitator. He's the master when it comes to professional, rehabilitation. He's the master when it comes to doing that. And I think the assumption of a lot of people is, well, Bill O'Brien, given the fact that he's a former head coach in the NFL with the Houston Texans, will kind of slide in and do exactly what Steve Sarkisian did for Alabama a year ago. But let's not be so quick to make the assumption that things are going to necessarily work out quite that easily. Because I think when you look at what happened at Alabama this previous season, I think it's important to realize that replicating that success, matching those numbers, is not an easy thing to do at all. In fact, most previous Alabama offensive coordinators in recent years under Nick Saban haven't come close to being able to do that. Last year, Alabama was second in the country in points scored, second in the country in yards per play. Go back and look at Lane Kiffin's final year's offensive coordinator 2016. Bama was just 15th in points scored, 22nd in yards per play. 2017, Brian Daboll, who's now Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator, Alabama was also 15th in points scored, 13th in yards per play. A far cry from the success that Sarkisian enjoyed in 2020. In the 1 year of Mike Loxley there in 2018, Bama was pretty close to that level of success, third in points, second in yards per play, but Bama still averaged more than 3 points per game more in 2020 than it did in 2018. So I think that pretty singularly points to just how successful Steve Sarkisian was a year ago. And for a Bama team that hasn't always been quite as good as it was under Sarkisian, and frankly hasn't always won the SEC West and the SEC over the course of these last few years, asking some questions about how easy it will be to replace Sarkisian, I think that's a very relevant topic. Listen, please don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not telling you that Georgia's going to have a better offense than Alabama this upcoming year. I'm not doing that because, obviously, as good as Alabama was a year ago and as good as they have been in recent years, they have certainly earned our respect. But I'm also not going to tell you it's a sure thing for Alabama saying goodbye to a guy like Sarkisian, now head coach of Texas, who was as historically good as he was a year ago. And on the Georgia side of things, an offensive coordinator in year one, even if quietly, but a guy that proved himself to be pretty successful, I would say for Georgia in a year of transition for other SEC teams, having continuity to offensive coordinator, having continuity at quarterback is probably a pretty good thing. Most people will not be a believer that the Georgia offense can be better than Alabama's this upcoming year. And we're not going to push that narrative too hard ourselves either until we see both of these teams on the field. There's no doubt Georgia's got some good things going on for itself right now, and it's fair to at least ask some questions about Alabama. The potential rematch for these two teams coming up in December in the SEC Championship, be interesting to see how both these offenses are faring once that game is played, if it indeed is. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 96 The Ref. And we're, of course, available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Should have given a shout-out to our friends at Twitch there as well. We love being on all the various video and podcast audio platforms, and just really thankful to all of you for being here with us as well. And a huge thanks to our friends at Meriwether & Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce, for making it all possible. Listen, we know this, that divorce is a real thing and a fact of life for many of you. Either you're going through it now, or you find yourself on the verge of about to go through this. It's really those folks that I want to speak to here, because I can tell you this, that when it comes to the big questions you have, and I know you have questions about this divorce process, trust me when I tell you that Meriwether & Tharp has the answers for that. For two reasons. First of all, they've been through this situation thousands and thousands of times, but they also just kind of have the personal empathy to understand the feelings that you go through, the fear, the anxiety, just the concern that you have as you find yourself going through this process. Meriwether & Tharp's not immune to any of that. They want to feel those feelings with you and help you feel better about that situation. They want to make you whole again, financially, relationally, everything that kind of goes along with this. That's what Meriwether & Tharp wants to do for you. They are your source for Georgia divorce. My invitation to you is to find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. That website, once again, theatlantadivorceteam.com. Meriwether & Tharp is your source for Georgia divorce. It's great to have them bringing Dog Nation Daily to us here today. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to have former Georgia wide receiver Terrence Edwards on the program. Before we do that, though, I do want to go around the doghouse here for a moment. And yesterday, we saw an extension of the NCAA recruiting dead period. This has been in place since last March. This was, I believe, the eighth time it's now been extended. It'll be extended at least through the month of May. And one of the things you're going to read at DogNation.com in the days to come is a lot of reaction from recruits about this. For the class of 2022, they have not been able to take their visits to be on campus, to meet face-to-face with coaches. They haven't been able to do that, and they're frustrated about that. And I certainly understand that as well. It's frustrating for me, too. And, you know, I think the thing that probably aggravates you more than anything related to the extension of this dead period, the inability of these recruits to visit on campus in kind of the official way, or even the way that an unofficial visit provides some real insight into the inner workings of a program. I think it's kind of frustrating for those of us who care about this kind of stuff that the recruits themselves don't seem to have a seat at the table. They don't seem to have a natural ally advocating for them. And when it comes to like the major powers that be, university leaders, NCAA leaders, in some cases maybe conference, leadership. Frankly, I don't trust them to get this right. They get so many things wrong, over the years anyway, that I don't necessarily view them as even being capable of getting this right. And typically speaking, the only kind of language that these folks even understand anyway, I'm talking about the people, the powers that be in college sports, is kind of the language of shame. Any kind of change in college athletics almost always seems to be a byproduct of some sort of attempt to shame the people in charge doing the right thing. And I'm guessing that we're not going to get some form of visit freedom for these current recruits until the powers that be in sports, in college athletics in this case in particular, are shamed into doing so. And obviously we have a global pandemic going on, and I completely understand all of that, but it's not like the people telling recruits they can't visit and travel. It's not like they're completely restricting their visits and traveling to other places. They have professional things they're doing. They're traveling to do a lot of that kind of stuff. And it's not like there's not a healthy and safe way for recruits to be on campus taking their visits, given the fact that these same, college football programs have been, inviting fans to attend games. The teams themselves have been playing those games. The notion there's no healthy and safe way for recruits to go out and take visits. I just find that hard, very, very hard to believe. So the question becomes then, well, who are we going to get to shame the NCAA, shame the university leaders who really comprise the NCAA? Who are we going to get to take up the mantle of these recruits and do that on their behalf? And I think it's a real disappointing thing that a lot of, because you have kind of like new guard college football media and old guard college football media, right? And the new guard, kind of like shows like what we do here, streaming video, podcast, things like that. It's almost always kind of told from a recruiting centric perspective. I'm not a recruiting reporter. I don't, break recruiting news, but obviously we talk about recruiting on this show all the time. And obviously I think we understand that recruiting is kind of the lifeblood of college football. That's kind of, I think the hallmark of the new style of college football media. But it's the old style of college football media that probably has the ear and the attention of university leaders more often than not, because let's face it, the people that lead universities are themselves old people, more influenced by old media. And I think it's a huge disappointment right now that the kind of the main powers that be within the old media corridors, traditional columnists, longtime traditional sports writers, where are they on this issue? Is there anybody from that sort of old media contingent, the kind of folks that the university presidents, the NCAA leadership, they're more likely to listen to? Are any of those people willing to kind of come down off their ivory tower and take up the cause of these recruits who, as it stands right now, have no seat at the table on this whatsoever? I think this is a pretty disappointing chapter for the NCAA here. And I think for the recruits of the class of 2022 who are expressing their frustration, I think they're absolutely right to do so. It's Dog Nation Daily. It's presented by Meriwether and Tharp here today. I want to keep this conversation going with a guy that's very closely tied to a lot of these recruits and understands their story as well as anybody could. And I'm sure he'll help articulate just how frustrating it must be to not currently be able to take any visits to the campus that you want to be a part of and meet with the coaching staff that you want to work with. Tough time for these recruits. Let's find out more about this and talk some Georgia football with our buddy Terrence Edwards, the former great Georgia wide receiver, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So, Terrence, I said this a moment ago. I think it's incredibly frustrating. At least I must imagine it is. I'm obviously not a recruit, nor am I a father of a recruit, but you work with a lot of these guys very closely. And to see this dead period extended again and to see kind of the old guard power around college football essentially just sort of shrug it off with very little, seeming feeling about this whatsoever. I just think this is a tough time to be a recruit. And it should be nice in my mind if someone would would step up and be an ally for these young men a little bit? I mean, how do you feel about this? Someone who works with a lot of, you know, 2022 prospects and, you know, guys from the 2021 class that also had to make their final decisions without the benefit of a lot of visits. You know, what is it like being a recruit these days?
It's very tough right now. And we're not speaking about the cream of the crop. We're not speaking about the guys that are 4 and 5 stars. They've been on campuses since they was 8th grade. So they kind of understand what's going on. But it's some of the guys that are lesser named kids that haven't got the attention that they deserve. And now that these kids can't get on campus and these coaches can't see these guys personally. So when I was coming out BA, it wasn't a lot of unofficial visits taken. It wasn't a lot of the way things are going now happening for recruits. Coaches came to see you, they watched your tape, and they made you offers. Now, these coaches these days, they want to see the guys in person. They want to look at their hand size. They want to look at their body size in person before they make offers. So now these recruits have not had the ability to meet these coaches in person or on campus to get around and see the academic standpoint of it. So it's a lot of frustrating times for these kids. And some of my advice to the kids that I've worked with, if you like a school right now with the portal going on, with the camps, we don't know what the camp circuit is going to be like. If you like a school and a school likes you, you better go ahead and commit to that school right now, because we just don't know what it's going to be like in the near future.
I think that's a really good point that you're bringing up. And I want to be very clear about this. As someone who's doing kind of a Georgia show here, listen, Georgia signed a great class in 2021 with no visits, signed a great class before that in 2020. This, for me, is not about the kids who are coming to Georgia, because Georgia's going to sign a good class kind of no matter what. As Terrence said, in some cases, this is kind of about the late bloomer who is not necessarily being, you know, enticed by every school he wants to be at. He wants to take those visits so he can entice the schools into proving to those schools this is a player worth taking. Terrence, we've talked about this in the show a little bit the last couple of days. There were fewer players that signed college scholarships the class of 2021 than for the class of 2020. There was a school, Texas State, for instance, that signed no high school players for the class of 2021. There are a lot of guys right now, because of how weird the recruiting process is, who are not getting a chance to play college football, or at least as it stands right now, whereas they would have been in 2020. What we're really talking about here is not the five-star guy, but for the guy who just dreams of getting his shot at college football, and these visits become the avenue for him to get that shot, right?
Correct. I mean, there's a lot of guys. I mean, just think about it, just keep it at the Georgia perspective. There's a lot of Georgia greats that were late bloomers.
Mm-hmm.
My good friend Thomas Davis was a late bloomer. My good friend Tim Jennings was a late bloomer. David Pollock was a late bloomer. So in this time of this climate right now, those guys would have not been at Georgia right now. So it is those late bloomers. Yes, the five stars are going to be able to do what they've been doing. There's no sweat off their back. But these late bloomers that become great players, those are the guys that are getting left behind. I mean, I have struggled this year trying to find guys opportunities with even just PWOs. Like, it is tough on these kids right now, and it's very sad, honestly, with these guys who have dreams of playing college football, because their dreams is being taken away because of the dead period.
No, I think that's exactly right. Let me do one more thing on this topic, and then we'll shift gears and talk about something that's a little bit happier. I mean, just with the receivers that you work with, and, you know, obviously you're part of the Pace Academy program, and there's a ton of guys out of that program who've, you know, kind of come to Georgia and other places. That's a very successful program. I mean, just how tough is it for a player to feel confident about the decision that he's making if he doesn't get a chance to be on that campus as much as he wants to be? The inner workings of the program, meeting with those coaches the way that you can do in kind of a non-dead period type time. How much tougher is it to feel good about the decision that you're making if you don't have the freedom to do what recruits have been doing for obviously years and years prior until this kind of pandemic period?
It's tough for them. I mean, it just now you just think about it. There's a lot of Zoom meetings going on right now, and these families cannot just see and feel the energy of these coaches and feel the vibe. You know, you hear a lot of kids talking about the vibe was right, the energy was right. They're not being able to get that feeling right now. A lot of times we make these decisions off of feel and what my heart says. I know that's what it was for me. It was just a great feeling to be on Georgia campus. When I stepped on that campus, it felt like this is where I need to be. And these athletes right now are not getting that feeling that they deserve because of this dead period.
Let me do a couple happier things here for a moment. I talked at the top of the show that I think that Todd Monken in his first year as Georgia offensive coordinator probably didn't get as much credit as maybe he could have. Obviously, Georgia wasn't as good offensively as the very best teams in the SEC, very best teams in the country, but they were better in 2020 than they had been in 2019. And given the fact that they did all of that work against SEC foes in 2020, I think really speaks to a even better horizon on the future for Georgia if you think about 2021. What did you see from Monken this past year, knowing that it was done without spring practice, done against a tougher schedule than Georgia had played in 2019? What did you see from Monken this past year?
I saw an offense that has the great potential to be an explosive offense in the future. I think we have the players at each position that he needs. I think he now has a quarterback that he's going to be able to trust to make decisions on the field. If that's all been checking, doing whatever he thinks feels to put Georgia in the best play that it could be in. I just think now I think we'll be able to see the full package of what Todd Monken wants to bring. Now the spring is going to be, this is what we need. This is what those players are going to need. We didn't have a spring last year to really implement everything that he wanted to. JT wasn't healthy enough to implement everything he wanted to last spring. So now he has a quarterback going to the spring that he trusts and the Georgia players trust. Now we can unleash everything that Todd Monken wants to accomplish.
And I know we talked about this the last time you're here, but you really can't put a price tag on just how valuable that is, right? To have continuity year over year, returning starting quarterback. We assume JT Daniels will be that. Todd Monken coming back year over year. That spring practice presence, something they didn't have a year ago with these guys in place in the same roles they finished the 2020 season with, that's a pretty invaluable thing for Georgia, is it not?
It is. This spring practice, and I can't remember how many days it is, but these practice is going to be valuable to a lot of these guys to get back on the same page. It's going to be valuable for the young defensive back secondary that we're going to have. It's going to be valuable for Chris Smith and Lewis Seen to be the leaders in the back end. It's going to be valuable for Jermaine Burton to make that next step. It's going to be valuable for Darrell Washington to make that next step as the tight end that we think he could be. So a lot of these guys, and let's not forget, Dominique Blaylock is going to be another guy that's going to get thrown back into the mix. So we have a lot of tools that need to be sharpened, and the spring is going to be that time to sharpen those tools.
A couple other things I wanted to ask you about. So the other day, the new South Carolina coach, Shane Beamer, was on a Dog Nation video show, and he was talking about his time as a Georgia assistant back in 2017. And he kind of describes a scenario where, like, right from the beginning of the calendar year going into what turned into a very good year, obviously, for Georgia in 2017, you saw that leadership make the entirety of the program feel different, what Nick Chubb provided and Sonny Michel provided, Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy, guys like that on the defensive side of the ball. And Georgia clearly had that special brand of leadership in that season. You obviously want to have that same kind of thing kind of show up here for 2021. You're a guy that when you played at Georgia, you were one of the team leaders. How do you think that this Georgia team can cultivate that kind of leadership, the kind of player-led phenomenon that I think makes a team better than if it's just the coaches barking out the orders all the time? How do you get that really good leadership to emerge within a program?
I think those teams with Roquan and Nick and Sony and that group, what's the leaders of that team? Jake was the true freshman and wasn't the leader. So this team, I think leadership is going to come from that quarterback position. That quarterback position is the common effect of a team that keeps a team calm. I mean, just look at Tom Brady this year. You go to a team that was 8-9, 7-9, whatever, they make the playoff. But his aura and his leadership just took that team over and took it to win a Super Bowl. So I think JT, now that the Georgia team believes, hey, we got a quarterback that can take us to the next level. And it's going to be his leadership offensively, defensively, and special teams going to take this team to the next level. And defensively, you still got N'Kobe Dean that I think would be a great leader. You still got Jordan Davis in the front. And I think Chris Smith and Lewis Singh has played enough football to be the leaders of the secondary coming back next year. So you have a lot of guys that have played enough football to be leaders. And leaders don't necessarily have to be your best player, just somebody who's going to come to work and be accountable. And we have accountable players on all three levels of the Georgia football team.
I think it's a really interesting point, Terrence. I'm glad you brought that up. Let me squeeze in one more thing before we let you go. You mentioned secondary a moment ago. The continued talk among fans is the possibility that Georgia might add like a graduate transfer in that spot, knowing that Georgia doesn't have a ton of experience there. One of the names that comes up is Deshaun Miller, the former West Virginia defensive back. Whether it's him or not, and we obviously don't know yet what, you know, Miller's interest in Georgia might be, you know, how important do you think it is for Georgia to consider an experienced transfer type player in that secondary? Or how comfortable would you be if Georgia just went to bat with the guys that it has, guys who are no doubt talented, but in a lot of cases, especially at the cornerback spot, it's guys who haven't played very much or in some cases not at all.
Right. I like the group they have. Keelan Ringo and Jonah Timber, I think, are going to be excellent corners. The green kid that came out of Newton, I think, is going to be an excellent corner. They just haven't played yet. That don't mean they're not talented. Yes, I would love to add an experienced corner that could be a leader with those groups who's played college football. But if we don't add any veteran leadership at that corner position, I think we're going to be just fine. I mean, we brought those guys in for a reason. The coaches would coach them up, put them in position to succeed. And I think once they get their feet wet, we could go and play more man coverage. We could probably play more zone at the beginning of the season and mix in some man coverage. But those guys were brought here for a reason. And at some point, you got to put them out there. You can't be afraid to put them out there because they're inexperienced. They're talented, but inexperienced. But we can't be afraid to put those guys out because we recruited them to come here. So why not play them?
Terrence, I think that's great stuff. Before we let you go, remind folks how they can get in touch with you. You're doing great work there, coaching up, teaching up the wide receiver position, pass catchers of the next level, really doing great work with that. For people who want to be a part of that, how can they find out more about what you're doing there?
On all social media platforms, that's Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy. Is anyone who's interested in getting their son from middle school all the way up some lessons and learn how to play the position the correct way, you can find me on all those platforms.
Terrence, it's great to have you out there doing that work, but it's really nice to have you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp today. Really appreciate that. Look forward to speaking to you soon, all right?
Thank you, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I think Terrence brings up a really good point there, something I had not fully considered. I think this is worth paying attention to. That when you think about the great leadership of 2017, and we talked about that before, the Chubbs, the Michelles, the Carters, the Bellamys, they weren't quarterbacks. Georgia had good quarterback play as a freshman from Jake Fromm in 2017, but as Terrence said, when you step on that field as a guy fresh out of high school, it's hard to be a leader. Now, I do think that Jake contributed to a positive team chemistry. I think that his kind of, you know, infectious attitude probably worked well with the Georgia guys, and certainly kind of, you know, he was a positive contributor in that way. But in terms of really having control of a huddle, really having control of a locker room, I think it's hard for an 18-year-old kid to do that. But we typically do think of quarterback as being the leadership position. So we don't quite yet know how these 2021 leaders are going to be in comparison to the great leadership that Georgia had in 2017. But as Terrence points out, the one thing this group does have is more of a potential for that leadership to kind of come from a quarterback than maybe you had in 2017 when it was a guy fresh out of high school. And when you listen to JT Daniels talk, man, he has a very smooth way of speaking. He's very comfortable. It's really easy to imagine that players would enjoy being led by him. To me, and I'm obviously not a player in that locker room, so I can't, you know, say for sure exactly what their feelings are, but my assumption is, and I think it's a safe assumption, that Daniels is the kind of guy that instills trust in his fellow Georgia teammates. At least that's the vibe you get when you hear him speak. Sometimes these kinds of, you know, projections and personas can be misleading, but in Daniels' case, I'm going to assume that's not true, that the comfort that he has in speaking with the media really is who he is, and that becomes something that fairly well translates to the notion of other forms of leadership there as well. That's a good point from Terrence. We don't know if there's a Chubb, Michelle type player on this team, or as Terrence said, juniors like Roquan Smith from back in 2017, but the traditional leadership hierarchy that exists in football, a lot of this coming from the quarterback, maybe easier for Georgia to get that in 2021 because Daniels has been around the block for a little bit. He was part of the class of 2018, and and you know, he's entrenched as a starter. Getting some leadership from him, maybe that's a maybe that's an easy thing to be able to do. Pretty interesting stuff there. Let me also remind you this before we kind of dive more heavily into our SEC through, that when it comes to your foundation waterproofing issues, I want you to trust my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know, ESOG is a proud partner of UGA, makes them really fun to do business with, but they're also a good friend of ours here at Dog Nation Daily and have been for such a long time. So when it comes to that water that creeps into your basement or your crawl space, and you'll see that some right now because obviously it's set to rain today. For those foundation issues, you've been noticing those cracks in your foundation for a while. Trust Engineered Solutions of Georgia to provide a solution for that problem. They got two full-time engineers on staff. They're easy to get in touch with as well. Dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. That'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. I want to bounce through a couple of SEC through topics here for a moment. So first of all, Cody Brown, four-star signee from the class of 2021 for Tennessee from out of Parkview High School. Obviously, with the changeover at coaching staff, you see this a lot. A lot of Tennessee guys were kind of, you know, unsure of where they wanted to be. At this point in time, Brown has officially entered his name in the transfer portal. And I believe Brown said on social media that he's been given his release from Tennessee. So looks like he's free to move on here. It is so funny. And listen, I totally support Cody Brown looking, you know, finding a new home. And I hope he finds a happy one. But think about like last spring when the pandemic topic was all the great Tennessee recruiting. And I told you before about like new style college football media, old guard college football media that in some cases, not only do they not follow recruiting, they don't understand recruiting. There was a lot of old guard media who was obsessed with the Tennessee recruiting class back during like, say, March and April of 2021. It's amazing how many of those names that we talked about with Tennessee back then. It's amazing of how many of those guys will never play a down for the Vols and never put on a Tennessee uniform. I mean, you talk about one of the amazing pandemic stories that just kind of fizzled into nothing. The unbelievable recruiting class that supposedly Tennessee was putting together for a while, not really coming together on the field the way that I'm sure Vols fans would have hoped it would last spring. By the way, speaking of Tennessee, they have now hired former Georgia defensive coordinator Willie Martinez as defensive backs coach. Is Tennessee aware that they can hire something other than former Georgia assistants? It seems like every assistant they've hired for the last however many years has some sort of former Georgia tie there. Obviously, Martinez did not have a glorious tenure as Georgia defensive coordinator, so Georgia fans will insert their own jokes about Tennessee hiring him. The other thing that you'll point to here is, you know, we talked yesterday with Shane Beamer audio. Beamer talking about watching Kirby Smart build his program from the very beginning, from scratch, and Beamer saying that he learned from that. And as I said on yesterday's show, it was pretty obvious that Kirby had a plan from before he got hired that he began instilling the moment that he was hired. And it didn't all work out perfect. Smart didn't get every assistant that he wanted, and obviously some recruiting battles that he tried to wage. He didn't win those for the class of 2016 either. But there was obviously a plan in place that he hit the ground running with. By comparison, are you seeing that from Josh Heupel right now? This sort of, you know, violent flailing in the night to sort of grab whatever assistant coach you can get to accept the job right now. If I was a Tennessee fan, that's what would make me nervous. This guy Heupel, who worked with Danny White, White clearly knew him. You know, the notion that Heupel would slide into this job and then try to figure it out once he's employed, that does not seem to be the track record, the recipe for success that has worked for previous coaching hires in the SEC. Tough times there on that front. And then one final SEC through story. I saw Jay Graham, Tennessee grad, now working in Alabama. Somebody put on Twitter something about the long streak of wins, several thousand days it's been since Tennessee has beaten Alabama. Graham, essentially turning heel on his alma mater, was saying, yeah, and that number is going to keep on growing and every day and counting or whatever it was that he said, but essentially kind of mocking Tennessee for how long it's been since Tennessee's beaten Alabama, even though Graham himself is a Tennessee grad. Now, he's obviously working in Alabama now, so the paycheck trumps everything, but this felt to me like a pretty classic heel turn on the part of a Graham. More salt in the wounds for Tennessee fans, if you will, and we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. I want to go back to yesterday's show just briefly, because we did something on yesterday's show that we don't typically do. We brought up some words by Dan Mullen, the Florida coach, and we didn't completely pan him for those. If anything, we are kind of careful allies on this topic. Mullen, when he was asked about, hey, did you take any NFL jobs? Did you really consider doing that? I think it's fairly safe to assume that, at least my belief is, that most of the NFL rumors involving Dan Mullen probably generated from the Mullen camp. I don't think I've, you know, been too shy about suggesting that. So Mullen kind of sidestepped the idea of how serious it was that he might move on to an NFL team. But in discussing the kind of scenario facing all coaches, Mullen said something that I think is at least fair to point out that might have some credence to it, especially in light of the extension of the college football recruiting dead period and everything like that. So as a way of kind of adding some new information to this, let me let you just briefly hear a little bit of what Mullen said from yesterday's show, and then we'll kind of pick up from there.
I'll address it this way. I think one thing that's really interesting, I think a lot of people are trying to figure out what the future of college football is going to hold and what that's going to look like going forward. I love being here at the University of Florida. I think we have a great program. We have a great fan base, great history, the opportunity to become a championship program every single year. I think that there are concerns with coaches. It's what the future of college football is going to look like, which I think there's a lot of uncertainties to it right now, of how that's going to shape up. So that might not be completely answering your question, but I think that's probably the fairest way that I think as people look at things and look at the future is, what's college football going to look like in 3 or 4 years? And I think there's a lot of uncertainty with that that we're trying to figure out as coaches right now to see what our futures are going to hold.
It's no secret I don't like Dan Mullen. In fact, many of you are aware I love mocking Dan Mullen, making fun of him for this and chiding him for that. But in this particular case, I think what Mullen says here, and I think he's good of him for stepping up and saying it, I think it deserves some real consideration that we are in a time of like rapid change around college football. Some of what's going on here, I would describe as radical change. And I don't think it's for a change for the better. And so many of the people that advocate for this change, if we sat them on this desk next to me and say, hey, why are you pushing for, really liberal transfer portal policy and, all the other things that go on there? I think they would tell us they're doing this in some form or fashion for the players. They feel like they are advocates for the players. But I think it's fair to point out that when the things they are advocating for in regards to players aren't actually helping players, then maybe we ought to sort of reconsider some of this kind of stuff. Mullen's right to say, what's the sport going to look like in 3 or 4 years? I think it's a very fair question. I saw where Outkick the Coverage, the website, Joe Kinsey, the writer here, cited a very interesting stat. This is worth paying attention to. This radical change to college football, wider use of the transfer portal, players going into it, programs using it. How well is this actually working out for the players who play this sport right now? What he says, Kinsey at OutkickTheCoverage.com, that according to Keith Grabowski of a podcast called The Coach and Coordinator, so this is where these numbers come from, that 72% of the players in the 2021 transfer portal do not have a place to transfer to. That we've created this idea, this thing, the transfer portal. It's supposed to be for the players. We've told them, hey, you're not happy? Just go in the transfer portal, and you can just do whatever you want to. But ultimately, what ends up happening is a lot of the players that go into that, at least according to this website and according to Keith Grabowski from the Coach and Coordinator podcast, nearly 3 out of 4 players in that transfer portal do not have a place to go. Just 299 players, 28% of the total number, have a school to attend on scholarship. That is quite staggering here, that the radical change being ushered into in college football, pushed into a college football, supposedly on the to benefit the players. How much is it really benefiting the players right now? Dan Mullen says, what's college football going to look like 3-4 years from now? I think it's a fair question to ask. Some of the changes that seem to be happening in the sport, based on how they're actually impacting players in the real world, to me right now do not seem to be changes for the better. All right, We will wrap up here. Now, after kind of being a little kind to Dan Mullen there, we'll kind of get back in character here for a moment and do our Gator Hater roll call. And when we do our Gator Hater roll call, we like to give out our golden shoe. Of course, the golden shoe in honor of Marco Wilson, the throne shoe that cost Florida the LSU game back at the end of last season. We have a great time with all of that. And today, we honor... Boy, you talk about a multi-time Golden Shoe winner. Mad Dog 19 on Twitter, quickly becoming the Ric Flair of the Golden Shoe. He has won this many, many times. His Photoshop today is a good one. Dartboard bullseye with Dan Mullen right there in the middle. He says, this is Mad Dog on Twitter. When you combine gator hating and darts, he gives us the hashtag gator hater, hashtag unfinished business, hashtag golden shoe. Good job by Mad Dog 19. He has owned the golden shoe as of late. You can send your submissions at Dog Nation Daily. By the way, speaking of Gator Hater Countdown, coming up in 254 days, Georgia gets its revenge on Florida. 254 days from now. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp.